Thanks for coming back each month to listen to Makeshift Stories. You can help support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast service, such as iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Is there a place and time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
A lenticular cloud is a dramatic, stationary, lens-shaped atmospheric formation, which sometimes is mistaken for a UFO. Other types of natural phenomena also generate reports of strange encounters. But through all the noise of misinterpretation, is there a kernel of truth? Are there unexplained events we should be paying attention to? In this month's story, Tanvi, an agent from a group called the Consensus, arrives at her destination only to discover that their opposition is already there. With the fate of two worlds hanging in the balance, she is forced to improvise. We invite you now to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories Episode 120, The Rift, Part 1. Somewhere in some time, believing might be all that it takes to make the ephemeral real.
Tanvi laid on her back watching the stars, filling her lungs with moist, cool night air. The scent of earth, pine, and nearby wildflowers was accented with the sharp metallic undertone of ozone. The remnants of a dense, ground-hugging mist were rapidly dissipating around her. What had she been doing? Tanvi's mind wasn't cooperating. It couldn't process the question, attempting and failing to reform around the intent of the words. She tried again. Where am I? This time, with an almost audible snap, everything jumped into place. She got up, sending her will into the body's limbs, exploring, gaining the confidence and cooperation of nerves and muscles. The materiality of the experience awoke unwanted yearnings which needed to be kept bottled up. After all, that was their way. It would test her resolve, but she was prepared for that. She had trained for this mission, and now she was here. A sudden, cool night breeze bit into her skin, making goosebumps. The sensation felt good. She noted her response and knew she would have to be careful. Get too used to the lure of the physical, and she would find herself trapped. Knowing what she had to do and where she needed to go, Tanvi refocused, then set off with purpose and a sense of urgency. Wayne sat in his kitchen, looking over the photos he had printed out. Brooklyn, the researcher who had direct messaged him in response to his post, had wanted to meet face to face. He had gotten used to an onslaught of skeptics, non-believers, and people with no imagination who outright dismissed the possibility without even listening. Brooklyn, one of the world's top paranormal experts, had been a breath of fresh air, and now there was another direct message, a researcher from mainstream media also requesting a face-to-face. Having endured years of ribbing about his obsession, Wayne felt vindicated. He immediately replied to both. Absolutely, he messaged Brooklyn. Let's meet tomorrow. I have a favorite cafe in mind. To Tanvi, he sent, let me know when you are available next week. He wanted to meet Brooklyn first, reasoning that it would help prepare him in case the researcher was just out to debunk him or treat his story as clickbait. His post and accompanying photos of his encounter in the forest near a nuclear research facility had generated the sudden interest in his work. Most of his adult life, he had been a part-time voluntary investigator for the Phenomenon Research Institute, or the PRI as it was more commonly known. His research generally wallowed in the never-visited hinterlands of the internet. That is, up until now. Shortly after his father had claimed to encounter a mysterious glowing mist while he was prospecting in Greenland, he contracted a rare fatal disease. He blamed the encounter for his condition, but no one believed him. The doctors, military, and media all claimed he had wandered too close to a decommissioned research facility called Century Camp. Although, they could never prove how he would have managed to climb over a 2-meter-high electric fence to do it. and why he would have ignored the nuclear waste warnings. That had been 30 years ago, and Wayne, now in his late 40s, believed his father's story. Proving him right had become a lifelong pursuit. So when Wayne, EMF meter in hand, had finally found something similar near another nuclear site, he was overwhelmed. But unlike his father, who had walked into the glowing center of the ground-hugging mist, Wayne gave it a wide berth, instead taking photos and measurements using his homemade probes. Brooklyn made her way through the deserted, empty streets to the address Wayne had sent. It was a holiday, and most of the shops were closed. An odd day for a meeting, she thought, but it was in line with the personality profile she had kludged together from Wayne's online presence. He was so focused on his obsessions that he tended to miss common social cues and lacked courtesies, like not setting up a business meeting on a holiday on the nicest day of the summer, at a time that would ruin the whole day. His lack of empathy would have bothered other people, but she was not just another person. She had come here with a purpose, and nothing was going to get in her way. Holiday or hurricane, she wasn't going to pass up the opportunity to meet a possible match. The bonus was that he already wanted to, no, was in fact, desperate to believe. Brooklyn laughed when she saw the name of the cafe. Bean Me Up was surprisingly upscale with a street-side patio, sprouting logo-camouflaged umbrellaed tables like spotted mushrooms. She shaded her eyes and searched, finding Wayne wearing, as promised, a black baseball cap and a t-shirt with the words, "The truth is before you." He was sitting against the wall in the shadiest part of the patio. She guessed he was somewhere around 50 years old. It was hard to tell. His skin was browned and weathered by the sun. His hair was turning gray. And the oversized t-shirt had been apparently selected to hide a middle-aged bulge. She waved, and he beckoned her over, standing up to enthusiastically offer his hand, bumping his coffee mug in the process. "Brooklyn?" he confirmed as he shook her hand.
"Please sit down. I follow your work. It's great stuff, solid writing, and irrefutable research. Your opinions carry weight."
"Thank you."
Brooklyn extracted her hand from his unrelenting grip and sat down.
"I'm glad to meet you. That's quite the story you posted last week. I'd love to see the hard evidence you mentioned."
Wayne patted a battered manila envelope, fresh-spilled coffee stains starting to soak in.
"You won't be disappointed. I didn't post the best stuff."
The waiter, dressed in black, finally noticing a new customer, reluctantly drifted over to the table. Brooklyn asked for an iced latte and waited until he sauntered away to place the order.
"Please, tell me the whole story and don't skimp on the details,"
she asked, studying Wayne, assessing him, trying to confirm if this guy was the trigger she had been sent to find.
"Like my post said," he began confidently, "I've been searching for more than 30 years without finding a thing. Then, these classified government weather records become public, and I found it, or more accurately, them. Unexplained, low-lying weather phenomena which appear near nuclear sites. The information was there, just buried in the data. I looked through decades of weather anomalies to find them. Dense, ground-hugging yellow mists which appeared from nowhere at almost any time of day and in virtually any weather condition. I plotted their locations and dates. Once I had that, all I needed to do was wait in the right location, and within a few weeks, I encountered one. Perseverance, that's all it took. That and the belief they are something more than random fog patches. You know that's what they were written off as, don't you? But really, why would a patch of fog appear in the middle of a hot summer afternoon or during a winter snowstorm? Can you tell me that? Well, the experts ignored these outliers. But the outliers are where I looked."
Wayne stopped to take a sip of his coffee and noticed Brooklyn eyeing the envelope.
"Copies, of course. The real stuff is at home. You can appreciate I can't take any chances. There are people who wouldn't want the truth to come out. I've had my father's declassified medical records for a couple years now. They prove it wasn't exposure to radiation that caused his death. Still, no one seems to care. He was just a nobody who was unlucky enough to contract a rare condition that only a few other people have ever had. You can't get their medical records either. It's hard to get the authorities to admit those people ever existed. I had a Geiger counter with me during my encounter, just in case. There was no radiation. This is something else. I don't understand what, but I think it requires a lot of concentrated power. That's why they occur near nuclear reactors. Some type of top secret project, maybe a variation of the Philadelphia experiment that they're secretly pursuing. But it's still not perfected. That's what my father walked into, and that's what killed him.
Brooklyn nodded encouragingly.
Interesting. I mean, the nuclear power thing. That was a great connection to make, Wayne. Mind if I take notes? Can I use this on my blog?
Brooklyn smiled. Wayne was perfect. He would make her work easy.
I'm getting a bit ahead of myself, Wayne apologized. Once I had figured out the correlation, I just needed to find the location closest to me where the model I developed predicted one would occur. There's a research station not far from here. The reactor is still being used. It's perfect. The bedrock is granite and quartz, like the area under the ice cap where my father had his encounter. I'm not sure what role the bedrock plays. Maybe ancient rocks in the Earth's crust somehow magnify the effect.
Good guess,
Brooklyn muttered. She knew it was the crystalline structures of the rock rather than their age.
Did you say something?
Wayne asked.
No, I was just wondering if a person was present each time, or were some of the anomalies just reported by remote weather stations?
I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that. Thanks, it's a good question. Anyway, about 3 weeks ago, I camped out near the facility, and when I got up in the morning, it was simply there, filling a depression in the ground not far from my tent. The cloud was glowing yellow. I've got pictures, and before you ask, the color wasn't from the sunrise. It didn't act like fog either. It was too dense, and it didn't dissipate even in the wind. It hugged one spot like it was glued to the ground. I had a hunch about what they are, so I was prepared. I hacked together an instrument package, EMF reader, FLIR and video cameras, and chronometer. Mounted it all on an RC car. I remotely drove the package into the phenomena. Luckily, I had a string tied to it, because as soon as it entered the event horizon, I lost control. I waited a couple of minutes, then pulled it out. The RC battery was drained. Same with the FLIR and EMF, but the chronometer had a non-volatile memory. So once I charged it again, I found that 96 hours had elapsed on the inside of whatever this thing is. Oh. And the mist just sort of vanished as soon as I pulled the instrument package out. The lapse time confirmed what I had always suspected. These things are some type of weird zone where time gets all messed up. Like I said, some kind of Philadelphia experiment that's never been perfected. It's dangerous,
he began to shout.
And the public needs to know.
Wayne,
Brooklyn cut in.
You're getting a bit over the top. You might want to tone it down.
Wayne hesitated, then lowered his voice.
You're right. I get so wound up by this stuff that I sometimes forget where I am. But you get it, don't you? My father's organs somehow changed while he was in the mist. He died of old age at 35 with the heart, lungs, and liver of a 99-year-old.
Wayne was getting loud again.
Do you think another event will happen soon?
Brooklyn asked, attempting to change the subject, hoping that would calm him down.
Everyone needs to know that this is real, Wayne, and I can help. Will you take me with you when you go? I want to stream it online. Then no one will doubt you.
Brooklyn asked calmly, hiding her growing excitement. It was going to be a near-perfect setup, but she would only have one chance at it. Once she streamed the event, they would know she was here, and they would move against her.
Yes, absolutely, Wayne replied enthusiastically. I'll look at the data again and try to come up with a likely date.
Tanvi knew she was almost too late when she read the interview announcing the day for the live broadcast. There was no mention where they would be streaming from. It was something she'd need to find out. How had their intel been so wrong? She should have been the first to arrive. She should have been weeks ahead of the dissenters. But now, instead of driving the situation, she would be forced to react. To improvise a new plan, and she knew improvised plans were high risk. It was far from an ideal situation, but there was no choice. She had to complete her mission. Both worlds depended on it. The Lemurians, the name the dissenters had given themselves, were not supposed to possess the means to transit, at least not yet. Not for another few months, or possibly never. yet one of their agents was here and had already contacted the trigger. Tanvi began to wonder if she had been intentionally misled. Had the Lemurians infiltrated the Consensus? Would she have volunteered if she had known the risk of failure was so high? She thought about it, then convinced herself that there had been no choice. Yes, if she had known, she still would have come. But she would have been better prepared. First, she needed to learn about her adversary before she planned her intervention. She needed to understand her nemesis, who she was, how the agent thought, and how she would react when the critical moment came. The public stream was still 3 months away. She had time. Tanvi monitored the woman's social media post for days, looking for patterns. Finally, noticing a cycle of repeating habits, she couldn't believe how people in this world freely gave up such information. She made a plan. Having got all she could through online sources, Tanvi decided her next step would be direct surveillance. The agent had taken on a persona called Brooklyn, a popular alternate news blogger who had mentioned a street market she frequented. After several days of patient waiting for the Lemurian agent, she finally showed up. Tanvi was feigning interest in some locally made pottery when she caught Brooklyn out of the corner of one eye. The woman was taller than Tanvi had expected, standing almost a head higher than the people around her. The agent was casually dressed, wearing faded jeans, a loose t-shirt, and a broad-brimmed hat that kept her face in perpetual shadow. Tanvi had almost missed her because of the hat, but the distinctive red-rimmed glasses, which had appeared in every online photo of the woman, had drawn her attention. Brooklyn wandered past Tanvi, checking out the stalls. Tanvi put down the coffee mug she had been pretending to examine, let a few people get between her and Brooklyn, then started to follow. The market was busy for a weekday afternoon, making the Lemurian hard to keep in sight. Not wanting to get too close, Tanvi stayed well behind and followed the distinctive hat through the narrow alleys between the stalls until the crowd thickened and stopped, where a street performer had set up. Several people were standing on crates to see, blocking Tanvi's view ahead. By the time she had pushed her way past, the hat was gone. She had lost the Lemurian agent. She searched through the crowds and stalls, but the hat was nowhere. Finally giving up, she turned to leave and bumped into her target. The Lemurian stared at her. A cold knot started to grow in Tanvi's stomach. She knew. The agent knew what Tanvi was. The Lemurian's hand dove into the bag she had been carrying. Frozen by fear, Tanvi cringed and waited for the attack that was sure to come.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 120, The Rift, Part 1. Please come back again next month for Part 2 of our story. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review in iTunes, or Stitcher Radio, or check us out on Facebook. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com, or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. And thanks to those from all over the world who have already emailed us. We release a new story every month between the 15th and the 20th. To listen to Makeshift Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's episode was written by Ellen V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. The opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David H. And don't forget to listen to our other story, series, which is posted around the beginning of each month. Makeshift Stories is released under Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivative License, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.